Okay, so I have my microphone. Thanks for the introduction, Laurent. And so I'm, as you said, at the National Research Council, and I have also two appointments in Torino at the ISI Foundation and now at Aalto University. And my work is supported by the ERC project SizeFX and now by the Academy of Finland for the Finnish Distinguished Professor Program. And this is what I will tell you about is my understanding of fracture size effect, a very old and studied problem, and to which we have worked for the past 10 years at least. And so the general idea is we would like to understand how, not only me, but the general problem is how you go from the atomic scale to the macroscopic scale where you have cracks, and what is the kind of coarse graining that happens, and then how plasticity enters into the game and so on. But in general, the general question is how things break at different scale, because this is a well-known problem, the fact that small things are stronger and large things are weaker. And this was realized first by Leonardo da Vinci already in this manuscript here. He had he conceived a test for metal wires. Here is the metal wire. And then he had an ingenious way to apply a load in a very controlled way by putting sand into the bag and then letting sand float in this bucket. And then when the wire would break, he could weight the amount of sand in the bucket. And so I have a very precise, or I mean, for the time, estimation of the fracture strength, or the load that the wire could carry. And what he realized is that he could add more sand to shorter wire than to longer wire. So shorter wire were stronger. And he writes this in the manuscript. You cannot read it. I cannot read it myself, not because it is in Italian. It is upside down. And even if you read it, it's very tricky language. But somebody translated this for me, and you can find it in books. And it really says, I mean, if you make the sample twice as long, you will see that you will need less sand to break it. And then some engineers in the 19th century were a bit puzzled by this, and they thought, well, maybe Leonardo was not really thinking about the length of the wire, but about the section of the wire, because of course the only thing that matters for the definition of stress is the weight divided by the cross section, and this is the same for the two wires. In fact, I think Leonardo was right, and really it's not only the section, which of course will be trivial, but also the length that at the same section that plays a role. And the root of this is disorder. And of course, the wires they had in the Middle Age were not very good as we have today, so they had lots of disorder inside. So all the more he could see this effect. And so this is has been interpreted already in the statistical size effect has been interpreted already in the 20s by Weibull, using this very appealing idea of the weakest link. So you have a chain, this is your wire, it's a chain of links, and these links are not all the same, because in some places you have more dirt, and in other you have less, and what really matters to break the entire chain is to find the weakest link, and the weakest link will be enough to break the entire chain. So you can formalize this mathematically, very simply, and say, if I have a survival distribution for a link, which is just the cumulative distribution of a given PDF, which is the distribution of this sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma n, the strength of each link, then the survival probability for n links is just the survival probability to the single link to the power n, because really the, you will survive if all your links survive. No? So that's this statement written here. And now you can do a little bit of asymptotics from this, and you see that if you have a low stress tail that scales like a power law, 1 minus a power law, then you get this Weibull distribution for the strength. So it's the exponential of a power. And of course, this is the most simplest hypothesis one could have. Say, let's see that, okay, the survival probability at zero stress must be 1 because it doesn't break by itself. And then there is a correction, and the correction is a power law. So one hypothesis you could have. And of course, why the tail is important, because of course, if you make n larger and larger, it is the weakest and weakest point that matter. So that's why you focus on the tail. And this is the celebrated Weibull distribution, has been used for a century to fit experimental data on material strength. The main problem with this is that it's very hard to have good data because you have to break many, many samples. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it might work, but we don't know because we don't have enough data. And but this idea of the viable strength is just a part of the story because we forgot completely elasticity in this. We just say we have a strength and we have a chain, but materials happen to be three-dimensional or two-dimensional, and so they have interactions. And they don't break just in one step at the beginning, but sometimes you break a little bit here and there. You form micro cracks, the cracks grow, and then they break the sample. And sometimes you have crack arrest and so on. So the picture is much more complicated. And typically, if you have a crack of length A, then according to the Griffith theory, again, the 20s here, you have that the load that you have to apply to make this crack unstable goes like 1 over the square root of the length of the crack. So the longer the crack, the more unstable it is. And so people have constructed size effects laws based on the fact that there are some large cracks, and typically Bazant has written many papers on that. So you have a material with a notch. The notch is size A. This notch may be just because you put it there, or maybe just the largest crack in the sample that is maybe scaling with the system size. And if you have a largest crack that scales with the system size, then you get a size effect law of this type that just comes from the Griffith expression, but with a little correction that was shown by Bazant to be important because the length of the crack is not the real length of the crack, but in quasi-brittle material, you accumulate a little damage before the crack. And so there is a little zone where you break stuff, whether this is exactly a precise zone is not obvious, but at least you can correct by a length scale, which is this fracture process zone size. And if you do this, you can fit lots of material with notches. So that's the opposite of the statistical size effect viable type. In the viable size effect, you just have disorder and you have no elasticity. Here, disorder is just a little perturbation on an elastic problem. Okay, so you get two different results. In one case, you get a viable distribution. In this case, essentially, you get Gaussian statistics and something that scales with the stress intensity factor divided by the square root of the length. So is there a way to put these two concepts together, the pure disorder case with the pure elastic case? And in fact, people have tried this as well already. Maybe the first was in 67, at least the first that I found. There could be others earlier. But then it was redone several times in different forms. And typically, the idea is that you have many cracks in the sample, and they are pre-existing. And now the extreme statistics is not on the strength of the chain, but on the largest crack. So you find, well, this, you have a certain population with a certain distribution of P of A of crack length. And then you ask yourself, if I have N of these cracks, what's the distribution of those? And it's, again, a similar argument as the one before for the viable distribution. It's just the exponential of the distribution of crack times N. N is the system size or the number of cracks. And now you can use the Griffith formula that relates crack lengths and strength, and you get a survival distribution. And if you have an exponential distribution of crack lengths, which is the simplest thing you can think of, then you get this new distribution, which takes the name, at least we call it Duxbury, Leith, and Beal, because they derived it very nicely in this paper, which is the exponential of an exponential to the stress to the minus 2. And now this is, you see, is something that is different from the viable, because the viable, we said, OK, the simplest singularity we can, the simplest behavior we can have a small sigma is just a power law, but you could have also an exponential to the 1 over x to some power. So this is, again, an acceptable behavior that is different from the viable. But then you could also choose P of A as a power law distribution. You could say your cracks are power law distributed, the lengths. And if you do that, you get a viable distribution. with an exponent that is twice the exponent of the power law of the crack length. So this was used. Of course, people like this much more than this, and many of these papers pointed out that this was a derivation of the Weibull distribution. So, but of course, it relied on very different assumption than the Weibull ones. So another thing that is nice is that you can see all this extreme value theory as a renormalization group transformation for fracture. This is nothing very deep, but a nice way which one could use eventually to do some perturbation on top of it. So this would be like the free renormalization group theory. So essentially, you coarse grain, you take your system, and you divide it in, this is sort of a real space RG transformation, you divide it in four blocks, and then you compute your, and then you have a coarse graining rule that says that the strength of the entire block is the minimum of the four sub-blocks. So that's your decimation rule. And if you do that, you find that the probability distribution, the survival distribution for a system of size L can be related to the probability distribution of a system of size L half to the power four, because you have four blocks. And so that's the first step of RG transformation. Then you can try to rescale the variable, the stress at scale L with respect to some two constants that are depending on L, and then you find the fixed point. And if you do that, you see that there are only two fixed points that can come out, and one is Weibull and one is Gamble, which is the exponential of an exponential. And this is another way to look at classical theories of extreme value statistics as an RG fixed point. Okay. Then, of course, this system has no interactions. So this block doesn't talk to that block, and this block doesn't talk to this block. But in reality, this is not so, because if you have any stresses and any heterogeneity, then, of course, there will be an interaction between this block and that block. And then you may ask yourself the question, is this extreme value theory fixed point stable with respect to perturbations? So do interaction send you away from the RG fixed point of the free theory? So the theory that has no interactions. And of course, this is a very hard question to answer analytically, and actually I have no clue. Maybe somebody can try to do that. But what we do is study it with a simple computational model and verify the assumption numerically. And this is why this is important, is because there are many, I just showed a few theories, but there are many more in the literature. And this is a figure, I didn't make this figure, this is in this paper, where they say, oh, look, we have data very few and very sparse for concrete, and if you have many theory, some predict that the strength for an infinite system is finite, some other predict that it goes to zero, and some other also predict that it's finite but goes down, and then they have extended size. I don't even know what these theories are, extended size effect, multifractal, which is not multifractal that you know, the multifractal of the engineers is two slopes, two power law slopes, the B fractal, and then when it's going smoothly, then it's a multi one. But okay. And so I think it's interesting to have some computational methods that can help guide the understanding of experiments, which by its nature is complicated, because of course you cannot break a million pieces of concrete and then get your nice tails of the distributions. But of course, you can break a million piece of concrete in the computer, although maybe it's not concrete, it's a simpler model that I'll show you, but we really could break it almost a million times and so have a very precise shape calculation of the tails. So the model that we've been mostly working on is a very simple one, and it's again an old one, and from now it's almost 30 years that is around due to Lucille de Arcangelis, Sid Redner, and Hans Hermann. And basically, you have replaced your elastic problem by a scalar problem, and so it's basically an electric problem. And you have a grid, and in this grid you have current flowing, and you apply a voltage drop. And so what you do at each step, you solve Kirchhoff's equation, you assign a characteristic law to each of these fuses, which says that after a threshold, at the beginning you have a linear law, and then at the threshold you just break the fuse. So this is just a minimalistic fracture model. It's interesting in my view because it has the two ingredients we were discussing about in the beginning. You have disorder, so typically you can either remove some of the bones at the beginning, and so you have some random percolation-like disorder, so you create some microcracks, or you can just set the threshold of each fuse to be random, and you can control the amount of disorder. And then you have the second ingredient, that is interactions. When you break a bond, you have to recompute all the currents, and this is a long-range process that will tell you what the stress, what the current will be in each of the bonds. And then if you want to go back to the mechanical analogy, you can say that the current is like the force and the voltage is like the displacement, and this is an anti-planar shear deformation, if you want, but on a lattice. Okay, so what we do is we set the disorder and then we break little by little our sample. And the first thing we did is study the system for dilute disorder. So we just remove a fraction of bonds, like 10% of the bonds in this case, and we compute the survival probability for different system sizes. And we do that very accurately, I think at least 100,000 simulations for each sample, even for the largest one. And so it's something that you're going to do experimentally. And we checked whether the coarse graining rule, so whether a system of size 16, when the survival probability of a system of size 16 is raised to the power 4, whether it matches the system of size 32. And in fact, for 16 and 32, it's not so nice. I mean, almost. It matches, so the dotted line is the 16 to the power 4. It's almost there. And the larger the system size, the better the agreement. So it really seems that you are converging to an extreme value fixed point, even though you have interactions and everything. And you see the size effect here. Smaller samples are stronger, and weaker samples are weaker. So we don't see many corrections from the interactions. And a good question for a theorist is why? But we try to understand what kind of distribution we get. And to do that, we looked at the distribution of cracks. We have in mind this Duxbury-Leith Beal argument that you can relate the strength distribution to the distribution of cracks. So we looked at the distribution of cracks we had. And this straight line here, this is in a log linear scale, is the initial distribution of cracks. So you have diluted the bonds, so you have removed 10% of the bonds. And as you know from percolation, this gives you a crack cluster distribution that is exponential. And in fact, this is what we get. But then we break a few bonds, because the system doesn't break at the first bond. You first break a few bonds as you raise the voltage or your displacement. And then at some point, you have a crack that becomes unstable and the entire system fractures. And so you ask yourself the question, what is the distribution of crack lengths just before the last bond? So the last stable state, which the system doesn't break, but has accumulated some damage. And what we found is that it's still exponential, but the tail is different. So it's still exponential, and so you would expect a Duxbury type distribution, this exponential of the exponential of 1 over sigma squared. And in fact, for large system size, it seems to be working quite well. A straight line here would say that this is DLB. But if you try to reconstruct the parameters of the DLB from the initial distribution that you've put in your sample when it was intact, you would get a different answer. So to get the right parameters, you have to look at the sample just before breaking. This tells you also that if you have some way to look at the microstructure of your sample before applying any loads, it might not give you a prediction on the strength. You have really to load it little by little. We can also compute the strength and see how it changes with disorder. And we see that we obey the prediction of the Duxbury type distribution, so that the strength scales like 1 over the square root of log of L square. And this is plotted here by plotting 1 over sigma square versus the log of L. And the slope, the sigma naught, depends on the disorder you put in. So the the more bonds you have removed, the lower the strength. Now, this is, of course, the more disordered your system is, the weaker it is. And this also answers the first questions about what's the strength for an infinite sample, and the strength is zero in this case. And then you can ask yourself the question is, what kind of asymptotic properties do you get for this DLB distribution? Because we know that that there are theorems out there that says the only asymptotic distributions are either Weibull or Gambel, and this is neither of the two. And Ashwini Shekhawat, who was a student of Jim Seton and now is a Miller Fellow at Berkeley, showed that if you take this DLB distribution and look at the limit for L going to infinity under extreme value transformation, what you get is a Gambel. So really, this DLB is a Gambel in disguise. The only problem is that it converges very quickly to Gambel in the central part of the distribution, but the tail converges very, very slowly. And actually, you can imagine that why this is so, because the Gambel distribution is defined between minus infinity and plus infinity, and of course, there will be no sample breaking at the negative stress. But in the end, everything goes to zero, and so even the tail will go there, but you'll never see them. So this is a good asymptotic expansion for the tail of a finite system, because, okay, we don't care about infinite system, we care about big systems. So, but if you want to know, is the theorem being violated? The answer is no. It's just that for any practical purpose, it doesn't matter. And then, so we tried a different game. We put exponential cracks. I say, why don't we put directly power law cracks to test the other hypothesis and see whether interaction have the same effect there. And this is what we did. And again, this is the initial crack size distribution is a power law with exponent 5. We break a few bonds, and the power law changes slope. And if we measure the strength, we get a new slope for the, we get Weibull first, so the theory works. So if you have power laws, you get Weibull. But the slope you get, again, is not the initial slope you would have predicted from the cracks you put in, but it's the one that you get out after a few iterations. So, and there is a relation between the final gamma, so the final power law, and the initial one, which we don't know how to explain, but that's what we find. Then we can try a different experiment, with numerical experiment with this model. We say, okay, we said that you go to this DLB distribution, but what if you start from Weibull? Is the Weibull distribution stable against interactions? And so we say we don't remove bonds, we just put thresholds. And the threshold, we choose them according to a Weibull distribution. And then a sample of size L equal 1 is described by Weibull. And now we ask ourselves the question, what happens for a sample of size L? And what happens is that we see deviation from Weibull. So for L equal 4 is a nice straight line, which is Weibull. But as L equals 8, we see deviation at small stresses. And as the system sizes become larger, we get even larger deviation. So we go away from the Weibull distribution, even though we started from Weibull. So if this was a chain instead of a two-dimensional lattice, we would know from mathematical theorems that you will get the same Weibull that you put in, even for a chain with n links. But for a two-dimensional system, it's not the case. You deviate from the Weibull, and what you get is, again, something that resembles the DLB distribution. This is the DLB plot, 1 over sigma squared. And the reason why you get this DLB is because before failure, you create cracks, and these cracks have an exponential tail. So that's what you would expect there. So you are really, your interaction are driving you away from the trivial fixed point of the Weibull distribution. Then we also looked at a more general problem of what happens when you tune disorder. And in particular, it is known since the 80s that for the power law disorder with beta going to zero, your system is percolation. So and the question is this percolation fixed point stable or not when you have beta that is not zero, because zero will be a non-normalizable distribution? And how does it scale with system size? And what it turns out that if you look at the cluster sizes, for instance, for cracks, they can be fit with a percolation scaling form, with correction to scaling from percolation theory. So it's as if you are flowing away from percolation, and the percolation fixed point is here. But as soon as beta is larger than zero, and L is here, we have a graph between with beta, which is the power law exponent, and L, you flow away from this percolation fixed point. So you have a percolation phase, which is a finite size effect for any beta that is not zero, with where you have percolation damage. Then you have an intermediate phase where you have cracks and avalanches. So you have formation of avalanches, crackling noise, and cracks. And then finally, you get the nucleation phase. So at the end, if the system is large enough, there is always one crack that wins, and all the rest doesn't matter. Okay, so this you can see from this simple model. So the take-home message from this is, again, the strength should go to an extreme value case, no matter what the disorder is. So elasticity always wins in this sense. And one can see that also in the distribution of, on the strength distribution for different viable parameters here. We see that first you have viable, then you have Gaussian, and in the end you get this DLB. So there is a, you just seems to go close to the percolation fixed point and then flow away. Now, before finishing, I would like to see, we wanted to test whether all these results that we got from toy models had any resemblance to some more realistic case. So we tried some atomistic simulation, and we focused on a 2D system, because we have been doing 2D toy models so far. So, and a good 2D system is graphene, and we want some disorder, so we added a few vacancies to this graphene sheet, and we simulate this with MD simulations, using Airebo carbon potentials with some tuning to avoid the spurious effect, because this potential was not made for fracture, it was made for other things, and when you approach, when you break bonds, it doesn't work, so you have to tune it a little bit. And now I wanted to show you, here you have stresses in the two cases, whether you load along the XX or YY direction, you get stress that are developing around these vacancies. So these are the stress concentrations, the region where you would expect cracks to develop. Here, for instance, you have a few vacancies that create a region that is very stressed. And see if I can do it. I wanted to show you a movie of how this works. So this is as we load the system on the X direction. You see that nothing breaks. You have some stress enhancement, but nothing really happens until finally, boom, you get fracture. So this is a really brittle failure effect. So you get something that is very similar, even better than the fuse model, because you have disorder, but you don't nucleate any crack. But at some point, someplace breaks. So then this is, again, slow motion. Nothing happens. Then boom, crack nucleation. And then it breaks everything.
And how is it produced?
Just a few vacancies, okay. Like 5 per 1,000, the maximum, or 2 per 1,000, 1 per 1,000, very, very few. Because, of course, it's not that.
How that can be described?
How large? In this case, we have up to 50,000 atoms. So from a few thousand to 50,000, we tested. And this comes in the next slide. So size effects. Yes, there are size effects, happily. And we start from 1,000, almost 1,000 atoms, you get a survival distribution that's like that. Unfortunately, you cannot simulate a million or 100,000, only a few hundreds, but and spending a lot of time on a computer. And then we go up to 20,000, we have even some 50,000 now. And you see that larger is weaker and smaller is stronger. So that's working. So what kind of distribution? We tried just to a viable plot, type plot, and it's not really straight. But what is remarkable is that all these curves have been collapsed for different system sizes. And each color represents a different disorder. So 5 per 1,000 vacancies, 2 per 1,000, 1 per 1,000, and 0 vacancies. But in all these cases, you get extreme value scaling. So that's remarkable because, of course, here you have thermal fluctuations because this is room temperature. You have driving rates effects. But still, it still looks like a weakest link phenomenon, although it's not trivially a weakest link phenomenon. And you get some dependence that is almost logarithmic of the failure stress on the system size. So so it goes to zero very, very slowly, but the effect is there. And although we have this extreme value scaling, we have things that are not there in the Views model. And in particular, if we change the temperature, we get a net effect. The survival distribution depends strongly on temperature. Depends on temperature, and depends also on the driving rate. So, but if you fix the temperature and the driving rate, then the size effect is the one done by due to extreme value theory. And now we have also a theory that I will not show you because I haven't finished, but we can understand that this is still a first passage problem. So it's always extreme value theory. So that's a very robust theory. So you make it work even when you wouldn't think it would. And so here's my conclusions. Size effects can be understood using analogies with phase transition and nucleation concept. And you can write RG type arguments and to see extreme value theory in this light. And what you see is that although disorder is important, in the end is the largest and strongest crack that matters. So, and in this sense, elasticity comes into the game because the largest crack matters because there are elastic forces. And graphene is a nice example where we can see this extreme value theory at work, but with thermal and rate dependence that are non-trivial, but that can still be put together into the same kind of framework. And before finishing, I would like to thank my coworkers, to which I owe most of the work. In CNR, we have Alessandro Sellerio and Alessandro Taloni. At ISI, Zolt Bertalan. And in Alto, my former student, Claudio Manzato, and my long-standing collaborator, Mikko Alava. And of course, at Cornell University, Ashivni Sekava, that I already mentioned, who did a lot of this work, and Jim Setna, who was his advisor. And now Ashivni is here in California at Berkeley. And finally, two announcements. I have postdoctoral positions, actually 3 postdoctoral positions available in 3 different places. If you have students or young postdocs that would like to apply, and whether they like the cold Aalto University in Finland or the warm, they can write to me, neither of these two addresses. And we have a school also, again, if you have students interested, coming up in next summer in a very nice place next door to George Clooney's villa on the Como Lake. Maybe this villa is even nicer, I don't know. And you can apply here. It's about complex systems. There will be lots of materials, biology, and other things. Thanks for your attention.
Hello, okay, we can take some questions.
In this graphing case, you put vacancies.
Yes.
You could put also 5-7 defects. This mm-hmm. would glide rather than mm-hmm. do what, because I didn't see any glide when you increase the.
Yes, nothing
so
happens.
It could be entirely different in result class,
right? Of
course,
of course, yes. It would be like a ductile type of
fracture.
We didn't try it, yes. Good question. Yeah, this vacancy do nothing, just stay there. Yes. Yeah.
Nice presentation. We passed to others to a metallic glass.
Mm-hmm. To metallic glass, I don't know. We want to try also that to see whether fracture of metallic glasses can be modeled by obey extreme value theory. This I don't know. Maybe somebody in the audience can answer whether they have indication of that or not.
Thank you.
A very nice talk. I have more of a comment, which was the renormalization approach to extreme value statistics was already present in a 1928 paper by Fisher, R.A. Fisher, and Tippett, appeared in the Proceedings of the Cambridge Philosophical Society, I believe.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if you know the paper, but it's a beautiful masterpiece, actually, where renormalization ideas are already there, except not called that, of course. I think everyone should look it up and read it.
I should look it up. I knew the reference, of course, but I didn't look it up. And I'm not claiming I did myself the RG, because this was, there are a bunch of papers also. And as an exercise in, by some Hungarian group, no? By an Hungarian group, no? Hungarian group, yes. Yes, and Jim has an exercise in his book about it. That's where I learned it.
Why get into the book? It was written the year after, but the year before all these other guys.
Exactly. So it's good that it was done already. In the 20s, everything was done already. So that.
Is there any experimental data on graphene on which you could try to test?
Not that I know, because it's very hard to break graphene, I know. So that I don't think, people have done indentation and...
I should mention there's a lot of published work on graphene at Cornell.
Okay.
Watching it tear.
Yes.
But it's not the study of the failure strength. It's that once it starts tearing, how it tears. Yeah. Actually,
exactly. We discussed a lot with the... Actually, I don't know if this paper will ever be published, no? The graphic paper from Cornell. will this paper on the experiment ever be published?
As I know,
yeah, exactly. So it's...
the question of whether it's still a secret or not.
Yes.
Okay, so Stefano, I have a question for you.
Yes.
It seems that you, when you take out some bonds in your model system, you end up with an exponential distribution of cracks.
Yes.
In which situation can you get power law statistics of the crack size that would be more reasonable with respect to experimental result, or does it?
I don't know, actually. I mean, could be that the power law cracks are there for some other reason that have nothing to do with fracture, so that the microstructure is like that, and then you break that. But if you just remove bonds, randomly you get exponential. To get power law cracks, we had to put them there.
My view is that corrosion could give you power law cracks, abrasion on the surface could give you power law cracks.
When
you look at the crack in the fuse model, where you put cracks at first, do you do it isotropically, or do the crack have some orientation?
No, by randomly removing bonds. So there is no. Of course, this is a scalar model, so isotropy is not so important, apart from the fact that whether they are in one direction or in the other, and we do randomly, so we have 50% in one direction and 50 in the other.
Okay, and the crack that you observe just before failure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
just before failure, you see no cracks. You see a lot of damage. No, you don't see.
When I mean crack, I mean clusters of.
Yes. You have a distribution of clusters that are exponentially distributed, but you don't see one big cluster. You see a cloud of cluster, and then at some point, there is a large crack that you can see.
The longest crack is still very short.
4 or 5, I don't know, something like that.
Coming back to Laurent's question, exponential needs a scale. What determines the scale?
What determines the scale? So the initial scale is set by what you put on.
By the
how many bonds you remove, what's the dilution fraction. What sets the scale of the other, I don't know. So it's...
Typically crack rigid.
Yes.
It's what?
You have two cracks that happen to be close to one another in one bond rate.
Exactly.
No, but what determines the scale of the distribution?
Well, you have a scale already from the beginning. So, and then the one you get is built upon that. No? So if you remove 10% of the bond, you know that from percolation theory, that the scale is, I don't know.
So maybe what you need to do in order to get the power laws is to remove the scale, do sort of a glassy kind of initial condition rather than a crystalline with
exactly.
Damage.
Yeah, you could do things like that. So in our case, we just created some.
Create the scale.
Yes, or we created power law by hand, just by growing some lattice animals and with.
For your models to work, are there any restrictions regarding the material? Is it to be an amorphous material, a disordered material, or a crystalline material without working?
Yes, it has to have disorder. No? Disorder must be important. Of course, if you have just the perfectly ordered material, you would not see these effects.
So. And if you want to take a step further, can you extend it to a crystalline materials?
Well, if it's brittle and has defects, yes, but so graphene is crystalline, and we put some defects, and it seemed to be working in some sense.
Thank you.
So I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about the models which predict that an infinite system has a finite strength. Because there must be some sort of cutoff in the distribution for that to be true, right? Am I missing something?
Yeah.
Sorry, I said the opposite of what I wanted to say. Thank you. That's my question.
Yeah,
Zero strength.
Yeah, yeah. But this model are not very refined model. It's just for instance, the fractal model is just divide the force by the fractal dimension of the
Which is very long. That's
exactly,
right.
Exactly.
So maybe, no, sorry, you corrected my question the wrong way. I wanted to know about the models that did have a finite strength.
Did, exactly.
Sorry, I thought you said what I wanted to say, but you said the opposite of what I wanted to say. I'll take that back.
So, exactly. So exactly.
Sorry, this is becoming an Abbott and Costello routine here. Try it again. So an infinite body can have a finite strength according to some models, but not according to a Weibull model, right?
Exactly. And
so what kind of modeling assumptions go into a body which could be infinitely long and have a finite strength?
I don't know, actually. I mean, they are
that would have to be a cutoff in the distribution,
yes,
right?
Yes, something that you cannot... Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're all agreeing.
Yes. Exactly.
There's a subtlety there that Jerome was going to tell me about.
Okay, so maybe it's...
Yeah, exactly. You have to have the fact that a long crack, if it's long enough, it will break the sample. So, and this is true in tension, but not necessarily in compression.
So. Okay, so it makes a nice transition to the next talk, I guess. Thank you, Stefano.
Thank you.